It's hard to know who to trust anymore. Many so-called conservatives in the media are either ideologically lukewarm or they're outright shills for the establishment. But when you listen to J.D. Rucker Live, you know you'll get a fearless, America First perspective that is based on a biblical worldview. Here's J.D. Rucker.
I'm sure everybody is familiar with the phrase, life is stranger than fiction. What we may not realize is that oftentimes life mimics fiction in the way that it's produced, in the way that it's happening, especially when we're talking about such things as politics and our own government. It is orchestrated. Many of the problems that we're facing today, perhaps all of them, all of the major ones, are manufactured. These are orchestrated problems, problems that we face on a daily basis that we have to deal with. These are problems that were created so that we could deal with them, so that the powers that be can achieve their goals, most of which are extraordinarily evil and nefarious at the very least. We've seen in recent decades, the last two decades, we've seen a handful of shows that have popped up that are very good. We've seen a whole lot of bad ones as well. And as somebody who has not watched television really for, gosh, 2, 3, 4 years, couldn't even tell you the last time I watched television on a regular basis or even turned on a television to sit down and just watch it. But I have seen some great shows in the past, and there's two types of shows, okay? There are shows that are driven by the actors. I would say Breaking Bad is one of them. Bryan Cranston's portrayal of Walter White is really what drove that show. And you could say, well, the writing was great and the storyline, the basis, the plot, they were all great, and they were. Without Bryan Cranston, the show would not be considered one of the best, if not the best, television show of all time. Then you have shows such as The Wire, which is, I would say, as good as Breaking Bad. But you really, other than Omar, and I don't remember the actor's name, he recently died of a drug overdose. But other than the actor who played Omar, I wouldn't say that any of the actors were exceptional. There were no standout performances that were just like, oh my gosh. You know, that made the show. It was everything that was happening behind the scenes that drove the greatness of The Wire. It was the writing, the storylines, the production, the directing. They made The Wire such a great show. The actors were there to deliver what they were supposed to deliver. Now, I would say we've experienced over the previous two presidencies, examples of the first. Now, before you say, you know, the first being Breaking Bad. Now, before you say, oh my gosh, you're saying that Barack Obama was great. I'm talking about great for what he wanted to accomplish, what his party, what his ideology, they were pushing for an advancement of cultural Marxism. They were pushing for socialized medicine. They were pushing for a lot of things. And they were coming off of a series of presidencies, really starting with Ronald Reagan, that, yes, granted, they deteriorated in quality as time went on, but they were essentially pretty milquetoast, okay, from George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, I should say, to Bill Clinton, and then to George W. Bush. Their presidencies were not marked by their actions per se, as much as they were marked by the actions that were the events that were happening in the world. The Iraq War, the first Iraq War, of course, for George H.W. Bush, the rise of the internet and other things during Bill Clinton's time, of course, 9/11. And the second Iraq War, Afghanistan War for George W. Bush. But then Barack Obama comes along and he was, you know, he was the kind of like the left's Bryan Cranston in a way. He did achieve many of the things they set out to achieve. He established, it was during his time that cultural Marxism truly blossomed. The foundation for what we're seeing today was set during the 8 years under the Obama administration. Then, of course, you fast forward to Donald Trump. And you see very much the same thing. Again, he was the conservative version, the Republicans version of Bryan Cranston, a great actor. I would argue that he could actually have done a lot more if he had a better supporting cast, if he had better people behind the scenes. He was in many ways a one-man show. There was only a handful of people that he could trust. Most in his administration were working against him, and yet he was still able to accomplish so much. But what we're seeing today with the Biden regime is the opposite. It's not that they're not getting things accomplished. Believe me, they are accomplishing exactly what they want to accomplish. As I said, the problems that we are facing today These are problems that were manufactured, problems that were manufactured in many ways by the Biden regime just in the last 18 months. That should concern you, of course, because we still have, unfortunately, a long way to go before this nightmare ends. But it's not Joe Biden that's driving it. He's not the Bryan Cranston character. He is just an actor. He's a placeholder. In many ways, he's just comic relief. He's a distraction. He and Kamala Harris, a distraction from the people who are actually behind the scenes calling the shots, including, I would say, Barack Obama, for sure. You also have people like Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Klaus Schwab, George Soros, the standard globalist baddies that are out there. One person who is acting, I would say, as a liaison, somebody who is helping to call the shots within the Biden regime, calling the shots from the perspective of, you know, the globalists who are controlling him, is Brian Deese. Now, Brian Deese has come into at least a little bit of name recognition over the last few days. He's the one who stepped forward and made the famous claim that Biden was pushing for this liberal world order. It was something that obviously drew a lot of attention from conservatives. We hear liberal world order. We think new world order. We think globalism. We think Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum. And again, all the baddies. But shockingly, I was very disappointed, actually, in most in conservative media, because it seemed as if many, including me in the beginning, we weren't doing our homework. Was this just a mouthpiece of the regime, or is this Brian Deese much more than that? I would contend, after doing my research, that he is definitely, definitely much more than just a mouthpiece, just a guy who maybe misspoke and invoked the liberal world order. We'll talk about him in a second. I do want to do a quick shout out to those of you out there who are concerned about your food security. One of our primary sponsors, actually, I should say three of our primary sponsors, are long-term storage food distributors. You can find them by going to jdrucker.com/food. And if you're watching, listening to this on 4th of July, then you can know that there are specials, deals that are happening right now. If you click on at least two of the three sponsors that we have on that page at jdrucker.com/food, you'll be able to secure some long-term storage food for yourself, for your family, because nobody wants to be stuck in a breadline. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Many on the left wouldn't mind it at all. I'm sure Bernie Sanders and his crew would be like, oh my gosh, it's a dream come true. We've only got 3 hours left in the breadline so we can get our block of cheese for the day. To each his own, right? So yeah, Brian Deese, this guy is, he invoked the liberal world order. Let's go ahead and let's play that clip.
They say that this could be a long war measured in years, and I think everybody understands why this is happening, but is it sustainable? What do you say to those families who say, listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years? This is just not sustainable.
Well, what you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
Before we talk about the guy himself, Brian Deese, this guy that just said what he said, let's actually focus briefly on the concept itself, this gaslighting that's happening. You know, over the weekend, we saw the Biden regime. I would like to say it was Joe Biden, but I don't think he knows how to tweet himself. So we assume that it was an intern or some member of the communications team that sent out a very abusive tweet, basically blaming the gas prices on now. Suddenly, it's the gas, the convenience store owners, the gas station owners, they're the ones, you know, it was Putin, and then it was Trump, and then it was COVID-19, and then it was I think it was Putin again. I mean, they just keep bouncing back and forth between who they're going to blame for why gas prices stay so high, and sometimes moving up, maybe a little drop here or there. But right now, the gas prices are not at a sustainable level, at least not for the people that are buying the gas. I mean, that's what Brian Deese was asked. You know, what do you tell people that have to be paying these prices for months, maybe even years? We can't afford it. We can't. People change their 4th of July plans based upon gas prices. such things should not be, not in a functioning society. And yet here we are. So they're blaming the gas stations. Now, Joe Biden or whoever's controlling his Twitter account sent out an ugly tweet over the weekend. It was just, I'm not even going to find it and read it. It was so ludicrous. But basically, he was calling on the gas stations to do something now. I mean, he was making demands, just as an authoritarian might, just as a tyrant might say, lower the gas prices now or else. It was stupid. And thankfully, I mean, the responses weren't good, not even from leftists. Okay, even Biden supporters are like, we get what you're saying, but really, you know, I mean, gas companies or gas stations, they don't make a whole lot of money off gas. There are gas pumps out there. There are gas stations, convenience stores out there in America today who are losing money every time they sell gas. They have to. They're trying to keep the prices. They're trying to stay competitive, keep prices low. And if you have some start to go into the red on gas, hoping they can make it up on the back end, make it up on selling Doritos or whatever, so be it. So then others have to do the same. And so every time anybody buys gas, they're losing money. They're paying people, essentially, or really they're paying the government, since government makes much more money off gasoline sales than the actual gas stations.
Yeah.
Don't forget, I live in California. It's ridiculous. But yeah, you know, they're calling, the Biden regime is trying to blame them, trying to make demands of them. Why can't they just, I mean, seriously, I would have total respect. I would come on the show immediately. I would have an emergency broadcast to say how proud and how happy I am with the Biden regime. If they would just come out and say, look, folks, we get it. Okay. We tried to blame everybody else. We're accepting responsibility. Lest we forget, Biden had at least two or three tweets before he was installed into the White House. He had at least two or three tweets where he was lambasting Donald Trump for not taking responsibility for this or that, about making excuses. No presidency in my lifetime has ever gaslighted America as much as Joe Biden has ever tried to, has essentially lied directly to us, lied to our faces about the problems that they've created. They refuse to accept responsibility for anything. I mean, if you were to listen to what they say, what they broadcast, you would think that everything is just absolutely amazing, hunky-dory, and that Joe Biden is the greatest president in world history. I mean, they literally project the exact opposite of reality. I went into this year, last year, you know, when it was clear that Biden would spend some time, we didn't know how long, but spend some time in the Oval Office. My expectations were as low as I could have possibly had them. I really was expecting the worst, or at least what I thought was the worst. And it's been so much worse than that. I mean, I have to chuckle, not because of the effects, which have been absolutely devastating to Americans and to the globe. I mean, you have to chuckle because of just how bad it has been and how bad it's going to be. And yes, folks, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but unless God himself changes this, it's going to get worse. I mean, the Biden regime is showing zero signs of even a weak attempt to make things better. One would argue, and one could make a very clear argument, that he's doing it on purpose, that, or at least his handlers are doing it on purpose. You can't fail this badly without trying to fail this badly. You just can't. You have to get something right every now and then. They get nothing right. They do literally every single thing they do is wrong. Even Obama got some things right. Even Obama had some things that actually were decent for Americans. There weren't very many of them, don't get me wrong. And many of them were basically just trade-offs so he could push his destructive agenda forward. I'm not trying to give Obama kudos, but I mean, let's face it, compared to Joe Biden, Obama actually had many more positive things that he did. And which is not saying much considering that Joe Biden has done nothing that can be considered positive for the United States of America. He is an abysmal failure. He is the worst president of all time. And he's been able to accomplish that, if you want to call it an accomplishment, in 18 months. And no, folks, it's not going to get better unless God makes it better. We can try, and we must try. We must fight. By golly, I just don't. I get frustrated, and yes, I know that I'm hyper aware of politics. I stick my nose and my finger and my entire body into it every day, 7 days a week. I immerse myself in it, and so sometimes maybe I get a little bit just negative because of how bad things really are under Joe Biden. It's not just the gas prices. It's not just food. I do not want to be a negative person. My goodness. Give me something positive. And yes, we've had some good news lately coming from the Supreme Court. That's awesome. I don't want to downplay that. But I mean, a lot of these things that we're seeing aren't going to directly affect many of us anytime soon. And that's, I mean, we're all looking for good news here. Maybe we need to start making some good news of our own. After the break, I'm going to dive into Brian Deese, this guy. Wow. You're going to be, it'll blow your mind. Okay. I mean, it will blow your mind. And then hopefully either this segment or the segment after that, we'll get into some actual solutions, because we've got to fight for solutions, folks. I'm not going to be the guy that's just going to sit here and say, okay, it's all bad. Sorry. Pray that God fixes it. I do want you to pray that God fixes it, but I don't want you to sit around and wait for things to get fixed. We have to act. Fight the good fight. And right now, unfortunately, the odds are stacked against us, but who knows? We keep fighting, not because we think that our efforts alone can win, but because we want to be part of the solution if the solution is presented to us. And the only way we can do that is if we fight the good fight, even when things are bad, which means today. Stay tuned.
Do you trust the Biden regime to stop our economy from collapsing?
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure.
Neither do we, which is why we highly recommend OurGoldGuy.com. IRA will help you purchase physical precious metals to preserve your wealth or retirement. Visit OurGoldGuy.com today. The current food crisis is only going to get worse. Now is the time to secure long-term food you can store at home so you'll never stand in the government's breadlines. Visit jdrucker.com/food. That's jdrucker.com/food.
The more we learn about Brian Deese, the deeper and darker his words become, because this isn't just a man who's out there, you know, just loosely running his mouth. This is a man with legitimate power, a man that I would say has even much more power than what is publicly known. Whether he is just a proxy for the globalists, or if he's actually part of the globalist elite, if he's actually one of the guys that is a high-level member of the New World Order, so to speak, we don't know for sure. And it could go either way, because he does have that skill set, that I guess you could say that he has the vibe of somebody who might be amongst those who are in charge, not just a pawn, not just a proxy to give orders to others in the Biden regime. He may be one of the ones that are actually calling the shots. He's very young, as you can see if you were watching the video. You know, this, I believe he's 44 years old. He started very early, and we'll talk about his bio in a minute, but I want to just be clear that his position as director of the National Economic Council does give him a wide reach. He can instruct many people, not just Joe Biden, not just Kamala Harris, not just members of the White House. He can talk to bureaucrats and instruct them on what to do. He can guide this push towards the Great Reset, this push that we've been hearing more and more and more and more about lately. And we need to hear even more about it. Because frankly, if you're watching this show, chances are you're very well aware of what the Great Reset is. But the vast majority of your friends, family, coworkers, neighbors, anybody that you talk to, chances are, if they've heard of it, they dismiss it. Okay, it is what it is. We live in a society today that is still complacent, despite all of the negativity, because despite all of the bad things that have happened to this nation over the last 2.5 years, there's still people that are like, oh, yeah, it'll all get better. It'll all work out in the end. Don't worry. You know, you just got to get through gas prices. They'll go down. Got to get through food inflation. It'll go down. Things will be fine. We just got to wait it out. You know, it's all Putin. It's all coronavirus. It's all whatever. Blaming whoever they can. Staying in delusion, staying in what a lot of people are called hopium, taking their hopium injections, hoping that things are going to work out just fine for them in the end. But it's really probably not unless we truly fight. And that's what I'm going to be calling on you all to do today. By the end, I will tell you what I think we should do to fight this. But first, let's talk about Brian Deese, because again, I have been rather disappointed in my peers in conservative media, as well as myself, for not jumping on this immediately. The more we learn about him, the worse it gets. He's a bad dude. He's a very powerful dude. We'll get to it. First, I want to make sure that we understand one thing about the liberal world order. We're already hearing, and this started on day one, where the fact checkers and corporate media and big tech were out there saying, oh, liberal world order, it has nothing to do with the new world order. It's really about the liberal international order, which was formed. You know, Joe Biden's mentioned it a few times, and others have mentioned it a few times. It was formed back in the after World War II. The idea was to bring a rules-based society, and it's truly liberal. It's not leftist per se, you know, and it's just about we need countries to work together. We need there to be order. What's wrong with order? The opposite of order is chaos. Do you want chaos? Are you an anarchist? I mean, the gaslighting was heavy. And they are, to some extent, correct. This is something that was created long ago. Okay. It was in approximately 1945, 46, 47, somewhere around there. This push for this liberal international order, which we now know as the liberal world order, became a thing. But here's the thing that they will not mention. Whether you call it a liberal world order, a new world order, whatever it is, both, whether they're separate or the same thing, they point towards a globalist future. And anytime we're talking about a globalist future, an anti-nationalist future, a future in which the United States is part of this grand scheme and we're one of the 10 regional powers that they want to establish, that they wanted to establish since, at the very latest, since the birth of the World Economic Forum through the Club of Rome, back in 1971. That is the latest that it could have been promoted, this concept of 10 regional powers, with the United States being, well, North America being one of them, co-equal in this globalist agenda. So yeah, that is definitely a concern, not just because we don't want to share power. We think that we can do better for the world if the United States is leading it. I still do believe that. Even when we have idiots like Joe Biden in the White House, I still trust the United States military, the United States in general, to be able to lead the world in a better way than, say, the Chinese Communist Party or the Kremlin or the World Economic Forum or the United Nations or pretty much anybody else. I mean, call me a patriotic Homer, but that's what I am. I'm not one that says, oh, the United States does no wrong, but I'm also not one that says, oh, the United States does no right. We'll see. But the push for globalism is definitely wrong. There's nothing ambiguous about that. And yet here they are trying to tell us that the liberal world order, the new world order, it's all conspiracy theory, but it's real, but it's not, but it's sort of kind of, well, yeah, whatever. You guys are wrong, you know. Here, take your suppression, take your censorship, and move along. Go to Truth Social or Gab or Getter or Parler or wherever. Get off my Twitter. Get off my Facebook, these fools. So Let's look at Brian Deese. This is all stuff, and this is public, so you can look it up yourself. I got this through a few different sources, mostly from Wikipedia. Where did he start? Where did this guy just pop up? Well, he started with actually Hillary Clinton in 2008. He was Hillary Clinton's campaign's top economic advisor. Of course, when she was summarily defeated by Barack Obama, Brian Deese switched sides. He became Barack Obama's guy, and he stayed with Obama for a long time. Keep in mind, at this point, he is still extraordinarily young. At this point, he is still in law school, Yale Law School, where, of course, he graduated. And he was up for a Rhodes Scholarship, did not get it. Maybe he did not want it. Maybe he already had his future set with the globalists, including Barack Obama. So he became, at the start of Obama's presidency, Deese was appointed as a special assistant to the president for economic policy, serving in the National Economic Council, which, of course, today he is now the director of the National Economic Council. But back even then, at his young and tender age, he was already moving up in the world. He was named deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget in the summer of 2013. This is an important one because, you know, there are, going back to the television show and movie analogy, one of the most important roles that you can have behind the scenes, you know, we all talk about directors and the writers, but cinematography is something that doesn't get nearly enough attention. You know, it's noticeable if it's bad. If it's great, a lot of times people will just give the credit to the director. Okay. Oh my gosh, he directed a beautiful scene. Okay. Well, maybe the cinematography had something to do with that. Anyway, point is that when you're referring to the Office of Management and Budget, you're talking about essentially Washington, D.C.'s, the White House's cinematographer. They're the ones that are pulling many, 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 many strings for what actually happens on a day-to-day basis, especially within the bureaucracy. The bureaucratic state essentially answers to the Office of Management and Budgets. Without their blessing, a bureaucracy, a bureaucratic agency can go nowhere and do nothing. So following the departure of John Podesta, Deese took over his brief on climate and energy. It's right or wrong. We'll get to that. Unlike Podesta, who served as counselor to the president, Deese was promoted to the position of senior advisor to the president. In this position, Deese played an influential role in negotiating the Paris climate agreements in December 2015. Along with Katie Barney Fallon, Deese helped to negotiate the 2015 Bipartisan Budget Act, which replaced the budget sequestration and increased federal spending by $80 billion over 2 years. In February 2016, the president tapped Deese to oversee the Supreme Court nomination process, which led to the president's nomination of Chief Judge Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. Of course, we know what happened to Merrick Garland during that time. We know where he is now, leading the Department of Justice. So he's flying. He's just, I mean, this young guy, he's making moves. He's part of this, just this, he's already extraordinarily influential, extraordinarily powerful within the Obama regime. But then Trump wins. Okay, I'm sure he probably had plans to go join the Clinton campaign or the Clinton White House, but that didn't happen. Praise the Lord. So fast forward to the Biden regime, and all of a sudden, now he's the 13th director of the National Economic Council. Now, the question you should, of course, ask yourself is, what did he do in between? What was he doing after President Trump took office and before Joe Biden was inserted into the White House? What was Brian Deese doing? Well, this is the part where, again, I get disappointed with my peers and with myself for not knowing these. And the sad part is I actually knew about him long ago. I checked through my archives. I've written about him, or at least published stories on my website regarding this guy for at least a few months. And yet it didn't ring the bell. It didn't. I didn't make the connection. And apparently very few are, because, again, I have not seen very many, if any, conservative news outlets, even the alternative news outlets that would normally jump on this stuff, they did not notice that this guy, between Obama and Biden, spent his time as one of the most powerful men within BlackRock. Yes, the globalist financiers, the the largest asset management firm in the nation, $11 trillion in funds that they control, that they determine where it goes. And of course, they are spearheading the efforts to push this ESG, environment, social, and governance initiative across both governance, but also, more importantly, across corporate America and corporate world. We'll talk about more about that here in a minute, but let's look at what Mr. Deese was doing in the period between Obama and Biden. As global head of sustainable investing from October 2017 until December 2020, come on. it's like he left the White House after President Trump took over, spent a few months, I don't know, kayaking or whatever, building up his resume, meeting the right people, globetrotting, doing something, and then October of that year, he gets this job, and of course, he leaves that job shortly after the Biden regime, even before the Biden regime was formed, shortly after the election was stolen for the Biden campaign. So as global head of sustainable investing from October 2017 until December 2020, Deese led BlackRock's sustainable investing team, which is, quote, is focused on identifying drivers of long-term return associated with environmental, social, and governance issues. Yes, folks, ESG. This guy was in charge of BlackRock's ESG. Come on. In an interview with the Weather Channel, I didn't even know the Weather Channel did interviews. Did you? I didn't know. Maybe I just don't watch it enough. I'm out here in California. We don't actually get weather in Southern California, but whatever. During this interview, he was asked about BlackRock's heavy investments in the fossil fuel industry. Deese said that BlackRock's role is to provide clients with more choices and more options in investing. And this is not just about excluding entire industries or entire classes of companies, but it's also about getting to understand, again, which of these companies is better positioned for the transition. Of course, the transition that they want is from fossil fuels to renewable energy, which is it's a position that I support in long-term theory. I would love if we could wean ourselves from fossil fuels and go to renewable energy within the next 50, 100, 200 years when the technology allows it to make sense. Today, it does not. We're trying to force it. This is destroying our economy. Ask Germany how they feel about their attempts to force the cessation of fossil fuels. Of course, they are now in the process, the people of Germany are buying up every wood-burning stove they can get their hands on. Because with natural gas being scarce, with Russia turning off the pipes, they were not prepared for this possibility. And now people are trying to prevent themselves from literally freezing to death this winter. And we're heading in this direction, folks. It's just very concerning. But anyway, more on Deese. Let's see. What did he say? Roles provide more choices. Transition, yada, yada, yada. During his time, his salary was at least $2.3 million. With the possibility that through BlackRock's restricted stock plan, Deese could have made an additional $2.4 million. Guy's relatively rich. Okay. So why did he leave his multi-million dollar a year job, this job that was had so much power, so much freedom, so much money flowing in his direction? You know, when you get into BlackRock, when you get into that level, you have your future is set. If you want it to be, you could be a billionaire, you know, go from literally nothing to a billionaire if you spend enough time accumulating your stocks and shares and everything else within BlackRock. But he spent less than 3 years there, just over 3 years there, so that he could jump over to the Biden regime. This is why, perhaps more than anything else, this is why I am far less convinced that he is just a puppet. He may be, but I would say if I had to choose one or the other, I'd say he probably is quietly one of the globalist elites. He's one of the guys at the top who's helping to call the shots. Do I think he's at Klaus Schwab's level or Barack Obama's level? No. But I also don't think that he's just a middle manager or a messenger. He's somewhere in between. This guy's got power. This guy has influence. And you can see the way that he handles himself. He has power and he knows it. This isn't just a messenger boy in a high-level position in the Biden regime. This is somebody of influence. It's funny because with investing always comes risks, unless you're investing as BlackRock, in which case you're calling the shots and they don't even care about profits anymore. They know that they're going to lose money. They're going to make money. They're going to lose money. They determine which way it goes, but they don't even care about that. All they care about is control. All they care about is guiding this world in the direction that they want it to go. Whether, you know, the question really is, are they the ones that are just doing the bidding of the globalist elites of the New World Order? Or are they the ones that are actually calling the shots? We don't know for sure. It could go either way. Again, just like with Deese, it could go either way. But either, it doesn't matter. I mean, our mission, our goal, our push forward remains the same. We have to stop these guys, especially as it pertains to ESG. And after the break, I'll talk about that. First, I wanted to mention, since we're talking about investing, we just recently picked up a new wonderful sponsor, MassTortFinancing.com. For years, MassTort Financing has been available, but pretty much only to hedge funds, institutional investors. Now, those who are accredited investors, if you're looking to invest $50,000, $100,000 or more, you should at least take a look at MassTortFinancing.com. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not telling you to go invest your money into MassTort Financing. All I know is that it seems like a pretty cool idea. I talked to the guys. I've been talking to the guys over there since last November. Vetted them out thoroughly. They are conservatives. They are strong supporters of the America First agenda. One of the gentlemen that I'm working with, I believe, Chris, if I get this wrong, please forgive me. I'm interviewing him next week. But one of the gentlemen I'm working with was actually one of the organizers behind the Freedom Convoy here in the United States. And these guys aren't just out there. Let's figure out how to make more money. These guys are actually putting their money and your money in places that make sense. So if you are an investor and if you want to, maybe not trust the stock market, not trust crypto, not trust the dollar, maybe you should look at MassTort Financing. It could be for you. Go to MassTortFinancing.com. After the break, we'll talk more about ESG, more about Brian Deese, more about BlackRock, the liberal world order, the new world order, whatever it is they're going to call it next week. It's going to be something, and you know it is. Stay tuned.
Have you taken the jab? Could you have been exposed to those who have been jabbed and maybe shedding on you? Dr. Zev Zelenko's ZDTOX formula makes your immune system clean, resilient, and resistant. Visit zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom. Mike Lindell needs your support. Get the maximum possible discount at mypillow.com by using promo code JDR or calling 1-800-862-0382. That's promo code JDR or call 1-800-862-0382.
All right, now that we've established that Brian Deese is just a bad dude in general. Hopefully you are very well aware that BlackRock is something I hadn't noted in the previous segments. Hopefully you are well aware that BlackRock is an evil company. You know, I shouldn't take these things for granted. BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, these are companies that have been, as I've talked about in previous episodes, they are fueling the New World Order. They are the financiers, so to speak. And not just financiers as in giving money to the right or wrong in our from our perspective causes. They're also the ones that are establishing control. They're using their various powers to take control as much as possible over the important companies and corporations that they need in their globalist agenda. Now, one of the most important ways that they do this, or I should say one of the most powerful ways, is through the division of BlackRock that Brian Deese ran for 3 years prior to joining the Biden regime. That is, of course, ESG, environment, social, and governance. And we're going to talk a lot about that. You know, I want to be clear, though. When we look at ESG, we have to understand not just what they say it is, but what it actually is. Environment, social, governance. I want you to stop and think about it just for a moment. Stop and think about this triple threat that they're pushing upon us and what that actually means. And perhaps the easiest way for you, if you are a conservative, if you are a Christian, if you hold a biblical worldview, if you hold a patriotic America First stance regarding politics and culture and everything else, then you should see a parallel here. For us, at least for me, I don't know about you, but for me, I look at our, you know, what we fight for. I look at it from essentially three perspectives, three fields, three avenues. Number one, first and foremost, is faith. I think we are fighting a spiritual battle. And so I hold faith as the highest and most important arena in which we do battle. Number two is cultural. There is a culture war that is being waged against the citizens of the United States of America. Cultural Marxists have been at work for at the very least 100 years. Okay, you can go back to the Frankfurt schools. You can go back to the machinations of the various, you know, post-Karl Marx Marxists. They knew, you know, why did socialism fail? Why did Marx's ideology fail to take hold? They were expecting it. Oh my gosh. From their perspective, they thought once people hear about this, they figured out we're just going to have total control. We're going to just run over the fascists, run over the capitalists. We're going to run over the Christians and the Jews and everybody else. That was their thought. And it didn't work, obviously, thankfully. And in their discussions, in their postmortem, after Marx was dead and after they were trying to figure out what exactly went wrong, they came to the conclusion that really three things stood in their way. Number one was religion. Okay, Marx was against religion, but he didn't attack it the way that they felt these neo-Marxists, the way that they felt it should have been attacked. They realized that was the one thing, the singular element of the plan that they could not overcome unless they could weaken it. It was just too strong. People believed in their faith. They held it strong, even in at that late time in the early 20th century. And so they attacked it. They attacked it hard. And they've been attacking it ever since. Of course, culturally, this is something that, you know, you might say, well, there's the blending of culture and religion, but it goes far deeper than that. They also knew that the family was an extremely important roadblock. They needed people to think as a collective. They needed the family to be the village, essentially, as Hillary Clinton would put it. They wanted the state to raise the children. They wanted the state to educate the children. They wanted the state to rule over the children and their parents. So this is how they attacked it. They viewed culture as an extremely important aspect of how they could achieve their goals, overcoming the cultural divide, overcoming the strength that many of us derive from our family, from our children, from our parents, from our communities. And I'm not talking from a communist perspective. I'm talking about our communities, such as our church communities, our work communities. They wanted the bonds to be controlled by the powers that be, the elites, them. So they have embarked on this cultural Marxist, this rot, this creeping push. This is how we get critical race theory. This is how we get LGBTQIA plus supremacy. This is why Barack Obama was so extraordinarily damaging. People often look at Obamacare and, yeah, folks, that was a huge deal. That was something that we're still feeling the repercussions from today and his various foreign relations foibles. There were so many bad things about Barack Obama, but one thing that he was able to do that I think really set the stage for our demise as a nation was to establish cultural Marxism within the White House and spread it across the country. Lest we forget, Barack Obama ran in 2008 on a policy that was pro or anti-gay marriage. I mean, think about that. Think about that. Both he and Hillary Clinton were claiming, at least in 2008, to be in favor of heterosexual marriage only. even in California at the time, for those of you who remember. California, you know, woke Californians, before there was such a thing as wokeness, they voted, we voted, to not have gay marriage. Of course, that was overturned, and we had Obergefell. It's just been a debacle ever since. And that was all, the groundwork was laid by Barack Obama, his presidency, and his push to establish cultural Marxism within the White House and across the United States. And then, of course, there's that third facet. So we've got, number one, faith. I hold that as at the highest regard. Number two, culture. We have to stop kids from going to drag shows, okay? I mean, it's common sense, and yet for some reason, sense is no longer very common amongst many, at least half the country here in the United States. So yeah, so culture is there, and number two. Number three is politics. I do believe that our leaders do need to be held accountable. I do believe that we are our own leaders. When it comes to how the United States was built, it was built on the precepts of self-governance. There had to be established laws. There had to be a form of hierarchical government, which is how our founders designed it. And it's worked. I mean, quarter millennium, we have done very well with it. Of course, it's deteriorated over the years, decades, centuries. And we're now seeing far too much government and far too little self-governance. So politics is something that I do consider to be extremely important. I fight on these three realms. I fight in these arenas: religion, faith, culture, and politics. Now let's look at ESG. Number one, they have environment. This is their big push. They everything is about the climate change. You know, the world is going to end in 10 years, as it has always been going to end in 10 years, according to the climate change maniacs. They've been claiming this since the 70s. Always 10 years away. 10 years later, it's 10 more years away. It's always 10 years. Or sometimes it's nine. Nine is, you know, it's a single digit. It's on the other side of 10. Maybe that'll really scare people into going out and buying a Prius. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know their strategies, their psychology. But yeah, they want people to focus on the environment, focus on climate change. Now, what are they really focusing on? What is the push here? The push with environmental propaganda, the push with environmental gaslighting, the push with environmental policies is to protect this world. Now, those of you who are familiar with the Bible, you know that we are supposed to be stewards, of course. And that is, you know, this is why I've said multiple times, I am in favor of proper environmentalism, environmentalism that takes into account that, sure, I want clean air, I want clean water. I think especially the clean water aspect needs to be addressed across the globe. Potable water is life. And we need to do everything we can to allow that. Energy is important, which is why I push for nuclear energy. We have to use fossil fuels. I'm not a fan of it, but I'm not going to force anybody to switch to green policies when green policies are not cost effective. They will be someday. I truly believe that. 50, 100, 200 years, we will have the technology developed to where we don't no longer have to burn coal or natural gas or oil. We can get all the energy we need from the sun or the wind or whatever technology they come up with, hydrogen, nuclear, something. It's going to get better. We're just not there yet. So we have to rely on fossil fuels. That's where we stand. We will do that for however long it takes, or we should, if we're not stupid. Point being is that, you know, to get back on track here, they, the ESG folks, BlackRock, the New World Order, powers that be, the woke left, they consider protecting the world, this world, as the highest calling. In other words, they view environmentalism as their religion. Now you might say, oh, well, but a lot of them are Christians, Catholics, Jews, Muslims, whatever, Hindus. Well, okay, yeah, but stop and look at them. I mean, are they spending most of their time, free time, when they're not working or sitting in their parents' basement? Are they spending most of their free time praying, or are they doing environmental activism? If you truly have a faith in something, if you view something religiously, you will put your time and effort into it. Fair statement. So considering that, their efforts are not towards evangelicalism or Catholicism, Muslims. I mean, they don't focus on that. They focus on their actual God of environmentalism, of climate change. So the E in ESG is, of course, their religion, just as it's for us, for me, hopefully for many of you, religion is the first tenet in your personal playbook. Number two, you know, again, I consider the culture war to be second most important behind the spiritual war. This culture war is right up there. And it's so, what's the best way to put it? It is arguably, as of today, the hardest one to combat because of the rampant wokeness. And where does this wokeness come from? It stems from, again, the cultural Marxism that went through, you know, from the Frankfurt schools all the way through to today, all the way through Barack Obama and now Joe Biden. It went through wokeness. It went through social justice, which is why the second letter in ESG, social, does refer to social justice. This is their push for LGBTQIA plus supremacy. They want companies. They use this to force companies to diversify, forcibly diversify. I'm all for diversity as long as it's proper, as long as it's earned. You know, I do believe, just as an example, I would love for there to be a highly qualified and properly vetted female vice president, female black vice president, or even president. If that person is the best for this nation, I don't care if they're white, black, I don't care if they're Hispanic, Asian, I don't care if they're male or female, okay? If they're the best person, great. I want them in there. I want diversity, but I don't want forced diversity. I don't want somebody like Joe Biden going, so, you know, we're going to eliminate, you know, 90% of the possible best candidates, and we're going to pick from a pool of 10% because we have to be woke. We have to focus on social justice, that second letter in ESG, the social component of it. And now BlackRock is pushing this, and as well as Vanguard and others, they're pushing this onto corporations. They've been pushing this onto corporations. You wonder, you know, you think, oh, you know, this corporation bowed to the woke crowd, or they bowed to cancel culture, and they made changes, and now they got this. Folks, these corporations aren't following Twitter trends. They really aren't. Maybe some people there are, but the actual leadership, they're not looking at that. They're not taking polls. They're not reading emails saying, oh, you guys need to be more diversified. You guys need to embrace and teach critical race theory. No, all of this is coming through BlackRock. It's coming through. A lot of it came through Brian Deese. This is the push by the New World Order. Handling that second component is, in many ways, BlackRock's responsibility. They are pushing companies to be more woke, both environmentally as well as socially. Which brings us to the third part. And this is, I've gone way too long. So I do apologize. I sound like Joe Biden. My time is up. No, literally, my time is almost up. So at least for this particular episode, I'm going to have to continue because this topic is far too big. I will have to continue a little bit later. But this third component, governance. Of course, I said our third component, or my third component, and hopefully many of you, is the political side, making sure that we have self-governance. When they talk about governance, it's very clear, you know, governance itself, the use of that word versus government versus politics versus whatever, governance itself is a very specifically chosen word because it doesn't necessarily refer to the elected officials. It doesn't necessarily even refer to bureaucrats. Their goal through ESG and their promise to many of these corporate leaders, such as Mark Zuckerberg, for example, their promise is that in the very near future, if they can accomplish their goals of the Great Reset, that it won't just be elected officials or tyrants or people like that. The people that will be running the show will be part of a public-private partnership, or actually should say multiple public-private partnerships. These public-private partnerships will essentially turn the United States and the rest of the world into a massive technocracy. And you could also say that it's a theocracy, considering their allegiance to climate change as a religion, but I digress. They want not just the people that you elect, but also the people that are there through the, you know, the secondary state, this private portion of the private public-private partnership. They want those people to also be running the show. Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos. These are the people, this is the push through governance. They don't just want it to be who we think we're electing. They want control through BlackRock, through Vanguard, through the World Health Organization, through the United Nations. This is their pathway through which they can achieve control and reach their goal of the 10 kingdoms that they've wanted since the 70s or at the very latest, probably earlier than that. It's the Henry Kissinger model. It's what they've been pushing for. And they're very close to achieving it. I am running out of time. And that's unfortunate because I want to talk some. You know what? We're going to talk some more. We're going to keep going. I'm going to push the button on there. I'm going to continue forward. And if you guys are listening live through one of the radio stations, you're gonna have to go to Rumble, okay? Because that's where the rest of this will be. You can catch it at Rumble. Just go to jdrucker.com/rumble, and you will get this last piece, which I have to keep going through. These are the three ways that we can and must fight this. So arguably, this is the most important part of today's show. So, apology. Like I said, Rumble gives me, I can, and not just Rumble, by the way, Brighteon. I can put the replays on Brighteon, BitChute, Odyssey, Clout Hub, any place that will have me. Not YouTube, of course. But still, here we are. And we have to push forward with these, what I consider to be the three ways that we can fight it, or at least prepare. Fight and prepare. That's my motto. That's why I became a late prepper. So number one, how do we fight this? First thing we have to do, we must do. First, absolute first thing. We have to get the word out there. We have to make people aware. I had mentioned earlier that Glenn Beck and a handful of others are talking about this. We need to be talking about this just as much as people are talking about the drag queen story hour. Okay. That gets talked about by the vast majority of conservative news outlets out there. Why is ESG not? It's because number one, it's not sexy. Okay. People will, if you're looking for clickbait, just put a picture of a transvestite dancing with kids or a video of whatever, you know, that draws eyeballs. It's important, as I've said, because again, it's part of cultural Marxism, which I consider to be the second most important aspect of our fight for freedom, fighting cultural Marxism. So I don't want to downplay it, but why does it get the lion's share when ESG, an actual existential threat, by the way, to the United States of America, why are so few talking about it? I think that a lot of it is just because the people aren't demanding it. So number one, start demanding it. Okay. Send tweets or emails or phone calls or faxes or smoke signals. I don't care, to your favorite journalists, your favorite politicians. We need America First Patriots to be talking about this on a regular basis. We need more articles. We need more videos. We need more discussions on talks, and you know, whether podcasts or radio shows or whatever. This has to take priority. I don't think that this is the most important topic out there, but relative to how much coverage it's getting, it's definitely important. It's definitely up there. Okay. Economic collapse that we're experiencing now, is that important or perhaps more important? I would say it's definitely more pressing, but it does get plenty of coverage, as does, you know, many of the other things. Some of them don't. But ESG is a true existential threat and nobody's talking about it. So number one, spread the word. And it's not just to journalists. Spread the word to your friends, family. We need to reach a tipping point of awareness about the dangers of ESG, about the dangers of BlackRock, about this Brian Deese guy. I mean, that should open people's eyes. He's in the news. Hey, buddy, you remember when that guy went on there and he said that you know, we were, Joe Biden is pushing for this liberal world order. Oh yeah, I remember that. That was terrible. It was so funny. Ha ha. You know, these stupid leftists. Okay, well, did you know that he spent 3 years at BlackRock as their head of ESG? Really? No, I didn't know that. When was that? That was between his time in the Obama regime and his time in the Biden regime. While Trump was in office, he scurried over to BlackRock to, I guess, master his tradecraft, to learn, you know, what to do and to make a whole lot of money, and then to come into the Biden regime and try to drive it towards ESG. ESG, what is that? Okay, you get the idea. Hypothetical conversations never actually go as they're intended to go, but you get the idea. Make people aware. That's first and foremost. Okay, we have to. Number two, this is going to take time. You know, we did see in recent months. Maybe you could say it's been over a year now. We have seen a groundswell of support, something that was long overdue, by the way, support for conservatives, patriots, America First people, going to school boards and telling them enough is enough. Your wokeness has gone way overboard. Your mask mandates have gone way overboard. You have gone way overboard. You're just too woke. We're seeing results from this. It's finally getting news. More parents are coming or attending these school board meetings. More parents are running to try to bring conservative family-based values back to school boards. We've ignored it for the better part of six decades. This is how they took control. There was a time when school boards were actually, believe it or not, pretty conservative. But they knew. You know, one of the differences between the, you know, the behind-the-scenes leaders on the left and the behind-the-scenes leaders on the right is that the ones on the left, they think in terms of years or decades. They make their plans and they say, okay, so we start infiltrating school boards and we will be able to achieve our goals here in the next two or three or four, maybe five decades. That's how they think. We don't. I mean, we might think that way, but we always focus on the fire at hand. It's like, oh, crap, we got to go to take care of this. Oh, crap, we got to go take care of that. We need to start thinking longer term, and maybe we can get to that point, but now we're back to, crap, we got so many fires we got to deal with now. We got to deal with it today. You know, it's a catch-22, but it is what it is. So what do? What we did with school boards, we have to start applying to ESG companies. This is why awareness is so important, because it's funny. I've been racking my brain. I really was. Earlier today, I was racking my brain trying to figure out, so how do we do this? You know, how do we get, you know, do we protest ESG companies? Maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe we just do, you know, start protesting like we did with Disney and their wokeness. You know, their value dropped dramatically. Maybe if we start going after these ESG companies, we can have an effect. Then I thought we don't have enough people that are aware, which is why I have that first note, which is to build awareness, spread the word. But then from there, I realized that this can't just be a grassroots effort. I mean, it could be if we can accomplish goal number one in a far greater fashion than I would expect. I mean, maybe we can build this groundswell of knowledge, understanding, and anger towards ESG policies, ESG certification. Okay, it should not be the case where a company has to covet ESG certification for the sake of their company's future. It's like, oh my gosh, we got to make these changes. This is, again, BlackRock's goal and the New World Order's goal is to round up all as many private companies as possible to get them aligned with the Great Reset, to get them aligned with Build Back Better, to get them aligned with this public-private partnership series that they plan on unleashing upon us in the very near future. They're in the process of doing it today. So we have to fight that by telling these companies no. But again, unlike, you know, it's easy to just turn off Disney Plus, but how do we turn off a fertilizer company that's owned by, you know, 9.9% owned by BlackRock or whatever? That's a little bit tougher. So, number one, we raise awareness. Number two, we have to start forming organizations. We need, I don't care, PACs, super PACs, charities, whatever. I'm hopeful that I can inspire some ideas here because I'm out of them. Okay. I just gave you my best two, and they're not very good. But it's still important here because we need people like you, like me, to come together and to fight this. And the only way we can do that is if we, the best way, I shouldn't say the only way, the easiest way to do that is to form organizations that can expose them, that can pressure them being the corporations. Where I'm not saying take on BlackRock or take on the New World Order, okay? I mean, they're just stronger than us. For those battles, the best thing you can do is pray. But to try to whittle away and eventually hopefully chop away at the influence that BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, the New World Order, this ESG push to break these companies away from that influence, we have to get our voices loud. We have to, and we can only do this organizationally. Like I said, I wish they could just be oh, you know what? Let's just go rally the parents and we'll go meet the school board. We need an industrial strength version of what parents around the country did with school boards. That's it. I mean, that's otherwise, I mean, we're just at their whim. I hate to say it. I don't want to sound like a defeatist, but only God or industrial strength action, industrial strength activism, or combination of the two, of course, is the most likely scenario. That's the only way that we can slow this, let alone stop it. Number three is, you know, I hate to be doom and gloom guy, but we have to prepare as individuals, as families, as Americans, we have to prepare for the possibility that we will not succeed, that they will win. As I've said before many times, I've picked my sponsors based solely on if they bring value to America. I've passed on some of the most lucrative sponsors. So if you knew some of the numbers that were thrown at me by some sponsors that I didn't really care about the sponsors, I mean, they've tried. You can see them. They're on other shows, by the way. So you want to know who they are, just look for those sponsors. Sponsors that don't seem to quite make sense. Like, oh, that's not really that big of a deal. I pick my sponsors because I think that they're big deals. Period. I am a firm for, if I had zero precious metal sponsors, I would still be telling you today, buy precious metals. Okay. If you are like me and you're not exactly wealthy, you don't have a huge retirement savings, you don't have a lot of money in the bank, then don't go buy silver or gold. Go buy food, ammunition, water, medicine, and other supplies. But if you do have wealth, if you have retirement, strongly consider getting precious metals. Move your retirement to a gold IRA. Go to jdrucker.com/goldco. They'll take care of you for that. Get cash. Cash is not exactly the safest thing right now. You know, they're already talking about, there's been three applications. Okay. Argentina, Iran, and Saudi Arabia is in talks to join the BRICS nations. That's an existential threat to the dollar if they are able to achieve something that could woo enough countries to dump the dollar as the world reserve currency, to dump the dollar as the petrodollar. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of, oh, just keep your money in the bank, keep it in, you know, this, that, or the other. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not telling you what to do. But if I had $300,000, $500,000, I would take a good chunk of that and I would buy physical precious metals. And you can do that by going to ourgoldguy.com. He will take care of you. Ira will call you and he will take care of you. He will send physical precious metals to your door. So if you're, you know, switching retirement, go to jdrucker.com/goldco, get a gold or silver IRA. If you want metals sent to your house, go to ourgoldguy.com. And if you need anything else, start preparing. I don't want to make this number three thing sound all about sponsors. Just get ready. I don't care how you do it. Go to some gold company. If you think crypto is the way to go, do that. I don't, by the way. But if you do, you do it. Whatever. Just stop focusing on, stop thinking that things are just going to get better on their own. Prepare for in case they don't. It's the best advice I can give you. So to recap, number one, spread the word. Number two, prepare for industrial-sized activism. We need smarter, richer, better people than me to be leading this. Form coalitions, keep groups together. And then number three, prepare yourself. Yourself as an individual and as a family. Get the things that you need to survive just in case we fail. So that's it. Rant over. Lord willing, I will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, y'all stay strong, stay safe, and God bless.
The current food crisis is only going to get worse. Now is the time to secure long-term food you could store at home so you'll never stand in the government's breadlines. Visit jdrucker.com/food. That's jdrucker.com/food. Mike Lindell needs your support. Get the maximum possible discount at mypillow.com by using promo code JDR or calling 1-800-862-8255. 0382. That's promo code JDR or call 1-800-862-0382.